This is Penny with Brave and Unbroken, and welcome to our podcast. Today's guest is Michael Skinner. He's a musician, an advocate, a survivor, and a person on a mission to protect children. Today, he joins us to tell about his story and what he's doing today to impact the world. Please join us.
What I'd like to do is have you introduce yourself and give us a little bit of your background, please.
Okay. Well, my name is Michael Skinner, as we just discussed. I'm a musician. Let's see. I'm a partner. I'm a father, godfather, friend, and I just see that involves, you know, speaking, doing interviews like this, and writing, and my music, and presenting on the matters of trauma, abuse, and mental health. And, you know, I like to think that I'm a down-to-earth guy. I love being in nature and all that good stuff. And I guess that's pretty much it for titles.
Great, thank you. And this is Child Abuse Awareness Month, Prevention Month, and Sexual Assault Awareness Month. And I'm curious if you could talk to us a little bit about your connection to this month and what it means for you.
Well, I am aware of it and always have been aware of child abuse and sexual assault and rapes, you know, the person growing up, but never thinking about it being applicable to me, just stuffing it down. But in 1993, all of the child abuse and the sexual abuse, the rapes that I experienced at the hands of both of my parents and many of their equally perverted friends finally caught up with me in 1993, and nervous breakthrough, whichever terminology you wish to use, I fell apart. So now I was told I have post-traumatic stress disorder, and I was dealing with major depression. So learning to heal from that, and within several months, I was connecting with other survivors of childhood sexual abuse and first advocacy efforts. And again, it was just to reach out and participate in their meetings or attending a protest or just trying to raise awareness in front of the state house here in New Hampshire, or helping out at the functions they did. And the name of the group, it was in a small nonprofit, was the Incest Center. So obviously you can figure what they were about. But they used the word incest. They applied that broadly to anyone in a position of power that was, you know, sexually abusing another person. So it didn't have to be just within the family confines. So that was really 1993 and 94 were more of an awakening and more an awareness, and just saying, I need to really be part and parcel of this and to start addressing this, because it did impact my life. I lost my business. I was running. I was a manager of rock bands, and I had a booking agency for a lot of bands. So I had bands performing all up and down the East Coast and as far Midwest as Chicago. At a small record company and a sound and lighting company. So on that respect, I was doing great, and I was still drumming on the weekends with a rock and roll band. But the most important thing, I was, you know, happily married, and we had five children. You know, we had a nice little home. But all fell apart because of what had happened in the past. So again, you know, my ex's husband and my kid's father, you know, is now holed up in the bedroom, you know, from depression and dealing with flashbacks and trying to get through it. So when I finally got enough of a handle to start healing, if you will, or getting outside more, I this just became my thing, is to say, it wasn't the path that I chose. It just happened. And I can't undo what happened to me. But so now I try my level best to create awareness on the long-term impact of childhood sexual abuse, rape, child abuse in any form, child abuse, neglect. My platform is inclusive. So when I say I address the matters of trauma, abuse, and mental health, so it's like a broader picture that I'm trying to address. So that's, in a nutshell, what I've been doing since 1993. Obviously, I've gotten better at it, and I've had the good fortune to travel throughout the country presenting and speaking on these matters. I've had some chapters in some books. I've done a lot of, interviews like this. I'm grateful for being part of something like this. So Penny, for you to have me on, this is an honor, because I'm mindful that there's tens of thousands of other people out there that you could be talking to right now. So again, I'm just trying to do my part to raise awareness on it. And I'm always learning. I'm older, I've been at this for a long time, but I'm still learning something new every day. So I'm always, anytime I can read or learn something new about the long-term impact of trauma, and obviously anything, we were children, childhood sexual abuse, that was rape, period. I don't want to put a gloss over it. It was horrible stuff. So it has an impact. The good news, you can heal. I think this stuff will always be with me for the rest of my life, but I have learned to thrive in life, Penny. I truly have. I enjoy life. I have found joy. I have found peace. I have found love. And so healing happens, and it's a slow process, and it goes all over the damn place. But here we are chatting. So that's huge right there. I could not have done this in 1993 or 94 or 95. So that to me is proof that healing happens.
Absolutely. It's definitely a journey. I know someone showed me a little video yesterday where a marble was going down a direct path. And then there was a marble that was going on a path like this. And the marble that went like this got there faster than the marble that went on the direct path. And I thought, boy, if that isn't a visual, and I need to figure out that visual. That is a visual of our lives, right?
Yes. Yeah. That is wild.
That's a big journey. What was, let's go back to 93. I know for me, and actually it's interesting, 93 was my year for crash and burn too. That's when everything came out and my mom was told what was going on. And I'm curious for you, what was your breaking point? What was it that brought it all together for you during that time and said, I don't want to be this and do this anymore. I need to do what I got to do to get through it.
Well, I literally did crash. When I say fell apart, I function. I just couldn't understand it, because I was always a go-getter. I was a type personality. I was a workaholic. And then all of a sudden, I can't even pick up the phone to call a club that I represent or bands that I work with. I did not understand that. I wasn't taking phone calls from the few friends that were reaching out to me to try to figure out what was going on. It was so darn confusing. There were several things prior to just a part of you. I've always had the memories, if you will, but to me, it was always like a little snapshot that would appear at the top of my head. There'd be this image of me, children, things being done or being caused to do to others, adults or children. And I would just stuff that down. But eventually, those little snippets, those little Polaroid snippets, if you will, they just kept playing a little bit more and more and a little bit more and more. So when I say the breakdown happened, what literally happened, it was if all of a sudden, back then I said, a video, and now obviously we have DVDs. It was if I had to watch a DVD of my life, all the abuse, it just unraveled and it would not stop. It was like watching a nonstop horror movie. And that was emotionally, it did a number on me, you know, physically, mentally, spiritually. It literally knocked the sails out of me. I've boxed, I've been in the martial arts, and when I was younger, I was in a lot of street fights. So I used to wrestle. I understand this was more devastating than anything. That was physically more demanding on me. That literally knocked me down. It was as if Muhammad Ali had just cold cocked me, and I just fell to the floor. I could not get up. That's how impactful that was. But there were several things prior to that. I used to attend adult children of alcoholics meetings. Mm-hmm. And what was happening is people started sharing about their abuse, the child abuse, the physical abuse, the sexual abuse. And to me, it was like the fingernails going down the chalkboard, and I would have to leave the meeting. That sort of set things in motion, because that had happened several months before. And again, the timeline, it may have been several months before, it may have been a year before. A pedophile started coming around our house and was walking his dog, the usual thing. And, you know, we had a big side yard where the kids were playing, and he was stalking my daughters. And then when we found out, my ex and I, what he had issues before, but he was in his early 20s, but he looked like a 15-year-old. So that just that did something to me. For that, I confronted him, and I physically told him I did something, that don't ever come near here again. Obviously, we also called the police. I took matters a bit further, because I was just in fear. I did not want him coming near the house or near the children.
Yeah,
and that sort of opened up Pandora's box even a little bit more. It just, I don't know. And back in 93 and 94, I wasn't thinking of that, but now, you know, hindsight's 2020, I can look back and say, that was huge what was going on with that. There were several things that sort of led to this breakdown, because it was building.
Sure. So can you talk a little bit about your healing and some of the steps that you went through?
I ended up in a mental health center here in New Hampshire, the Manchester Mental Health Center. And I don't knock everybody, I don't, but there was some really good people in there that were trying to help me and address the trauma and abuse in my life. And then there were others that were just, they just wanted to label me mentally ill.
Right.
And I was put on a regimen of drugs, you know, so a drug for this, a drug for that, a drug. So I finally learned to stop. Every time I had a nightmare or a flashback or something came up, I would go tell the therapist, and then they'd bring me to the doctor. Next thing you know, they're writing up another prescription. Oh. It didn't take long for me to finally say, I'm not going to say anything anymore. But by then, I was on at least 8 to 12 meds. It was once upon a time, my ex had started compiling a list saying, this is wrong, but they weren't listening to her. They weren't listening to me. So there were some good people that were helpful, but others, again, it was just, I'm dealing with trauma and abuse, and they're using the mentally ill model, you know, so they were treating me the same way they would treat someone with bipolar or schizophrenia. And as I've come to learn, most of those folks are dealing with trauma and abuse of their own lives, and it manifests itself a lot in those ways. Not all the time, but that's another way that it can manifest itself. Mm-hmm. Long story short, I did start attending support group meetings, driving down to Boston, because I'm up in New Hampshire. That was an hour away. It was usually longer, because to get into Boston, you know, that could take an hour and a half.
Right.
So with that, and then friends started talking to me about, and I started learning about the trauma center in Boston. And that was, once upon a time, that's where Bessel van der Kolk mm-hmm. was the medical director.
Oh, yeah.
So I started going there, and that's when the woman psychologist I started seeing really started putting things in perspective for me. She got me to address dissociation, which I did not want to address, okay? I didn't. I was already told I was mentally ill. I did not want to even go near that can of worms. I knew I spaced out, and I knew I was down the street and all the rest of it all the time.
Yeah.
But I did not want that little box checked off as well, but it had to be checked off. So when I started dealing with that, she was really helpful for those 2 years. Then the support group meetings, and then just reading every book I could get my hand on, a film, an article, documentary. Again, I was like a sponge. I just wanted to learn, but also trying to balance that with good things. You know, I picked up the guitar. I've been a drummer all my life, and that's how I made a living for a good part of my life. But I always wanted to play the guitar. So even in the midst of this, I picked up the guitar and learned how to play, and then started playing out in pubs and coffee houses, started writing songs, and I released 3 CDs. And so I was getting gigs. So it's just been a combination of things. You know, the key is pursuing the things that I love. And what do I love? Is music, being outside in nature, and eventually weaning off all the meds. And again, and I'm not anti-medication, Penny. I'm just anti-over-medication. And if someone doesn't need to be on a drug or it's causing adverse reactions, then damn it, get them off it and, you know, at least listen to them. So I have friends where certain medications do help them. So I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, you shouldn't be on that. No, if it's helping you, you know, fine. But for me, they were toxic, you know, because we're all different. So I support group meetings, you know, what a lot of people now want to call peer support. But I was getting what you'd call peer support back in the, you know, going to adult children of alcoholics meetings.
Right.
So, and going to survivor children, you know, child sexual abuse support group meetings, going to some support groups for folks with mental health. So it was a lot of different things. Getting back to hiking, I would go out to the mountains in the woods, you know, several days at a time and just pitch a tent and climb all over the mountains and swim in the lakes, and that was helpful. Learning to eat right. So just exercising, you know, getting back to just trying to be me again, but recognizing it wasn't going to go back to the way it used to be. Finding acceptance with that.
Yeah, that's wonderful. You mentioned disassociation on a podcast that I released earlier this week with a survivor named Beth. We talked about this because I've talked about this with people, and the concept I think is hard for people to get their head around if they've never experienced it. And even with my personal abuse and being kind of up on the hill, you know, up in the sky, like looking down, like these, you know, images and memories are like floating and watching, like from a hovercraft or a, you know, something similar. So maybe you could talk a little bit about what you learned through that understanding of disassociation and how it really impacts abuse and trauma.
I've always loved reading. So even, I don't want to say as a young boy, but probably more when I was around 11 and 12, especially in my teenage years, I was reading all kinds of history books and survival books. I read about people surviving the Holocaust, you know, war. It wasn't for the horror of war. I wanted to understand how people survive things, or crossing the West, crossing over the seas in those old boats. And I have always remembered being up in that corner of the room looking down or floating down the street. And I, as a little kid, I always was thinking to myself, am I crazy? I don't want to be crazy. So I never shared that with anybody. But Penny, those are what I remember from my abuse. I was looking down and seeing all of this. So what helped me back then, even as a, you know, young teenager, you know, say, let's say 11, 12, 13, 14, even reading about people that had died on the operating table, or maybe died in a car accident, or they were just so traumatized, they were floating out and they could describe what the emergency medical technicians were doing to them, or the doctors, or the soldier in combat who was just horribly wounded and he's looking down at the battlefield. And I'm thinking, oh, I understand. They're like me. So they start, that helped me to feel a little bit better about what I was going through. I did not have the mindset to say, oh, this is dissociation when I'm 15 years old. I just knew that other people were experiencing this, and I can't even remember what they were calling it, obviously out-of-body experiences. And then be one camp saying, this is real, this is a normal response to trauma. And then others just saying, oh, no, it's all, you know, a bunch of baloney. But I just knew in my heart what those people experienced, that helped me to feel better. I still kept that to myself because I still wonder, am I crazy? It is. It's the most surreal thing. You know it. You've experienced it. How do you describe to someone, you're in the corner of the room and you see every damn detail that's going on? It's, and those details are locked. It's there. But I can't tell you something else the same day that happened. I can't even remember. My memory is blocked. So I didn't have different identities, if you will, but I definitely, I spaced out all the time. And even in work, I was always dissociating. I was dissociating around my children, my wife. You know, even I still do, but I've learned to live with it, and I joke about it. I drink a lot of water, so even, like now I'm grabbing a cold water just to help ground me. I use my chapstick. I'll pull that out and to just help ground, you know, and I may rub it in my hand, the rough edge of it, just to bring me back. So I'm here, but I'm not. It's very easy. Even for an interview like this, I caught myself, you asked me some questions. I start going down the rabbit hole because I'm just spacing out. It's not that I didn't hear your question. All of a sudden, I'm spacing out, and it's like, oh, come back, Michael. Let's reel you back in here. Yeah. So for me, that counselor, the psychologist, and I was angry. I actually stormed out of her office when she said, Michael, you're dealing with dissociation. And I used the F word and that, and I drove home all the way from Boston up to Manchester, New Hampshire, angry. I'm never going to see her again. Who the hell is she? And she had called several times to check on me, very kind and patient. And then several days later, I called her back and I apologized. She says, Michael, I understand. It's okay. So I did start. I went back down and now I started addressing dissociation. But that's how resistant I was to looking at it, because I was afraid of it. And I just did not want one more thing being used against me about being mentally ill. I was just getting so tired of people saying you're mentally ill. I was just tired of hearing that. And I thought, oh gosh, this is just going to give them more ammunition.
Yeah, for sure. You want a water break? Yeah. Yeah, disassociation is an interesting one because we don't talk about it. We don't talk about rape of children, right? We don't go down to the grocery store and over oranges, say, hey, are you, you know, have you ever looked at oranges from the ceiling? And, you know, it's just not stuff that we do in the world, right? So it's a big deal. It's a really big deal. Let's talk about, this is interesting that you mentioned the incest center. The cover of my memoir says the word incest is on the cover. And my oldest was, when he saw the draft, he was like, are you sure you want to put that word on there? You sure you want to put that into the world? People won't buy your book if it says incest on it. Nobody will read it, Mom. You need to think about that word. And I thought, even my 20-year-old, you know, at the time he was 17, innately knows that that word makes people cringe. And right. So I'm curious for you, you know, I talk about, I think you and I are, you know, that was one thing I was drawn to, our websites and kind of all of the stuff that we're working on kind of melds together in thought and process and themes. And this is one that I feel really strongly about, is the language that we use in the world and really calling things what they are. And so I'm curious for you, like going to the incest center and working through this and acknowledging, as you've continued to acknowledge things as they've gone, how has that evolved for you?
I'm like you in that respect. I, you know, the old saying, call a spade for what it is.
Yeah.
And it's always angered me when I've read things, or inappropriate touching or the molestation of children. Rape is rape, incest, they are strong words. We need to hear about these things. And again, I understand you don't want to just go one thing after another. But if you're writing a memoir, you're doing an interview, or there's a documentary, a film, that thing, those words need to be spoken about. And I think back to when I was a young boy, you know, watching the war movies, you know, and the guy would die and he'd fall and there'd be angelic singing and everyone's around and he smell, tell my wife I love her. No, and then later on, war movies really started showing what happened. People are screaming, they're being ripped apart. Is that horrible? Is it gruesome? Absolutely. But maybe it gets people thinking, oh, maybe we shouldn't be having wars, you know? It's the same thing with child abuse and rape of a child. That is horrible to think about. We're the ones who have to deal with this. I have physical things that bother me every damn day. So if you have to hear me talk about every now and then say, well, you know, I was raped by, you know, multiple perpetrators. There were female abusers that made me do things that made me gag and disgust and want to vomit. Darn it, it's only a snippet. It's not going to ruin your life, but how else are we going to get society to really look at this and say, we need to address this? Because we can't go back, you and I and others who've been hurt by this, and undo that. But darn it, we can help people today. We can. I just want to end this generational cycle of abuse and trauma. And to me, we're dealing with the pandemic right now. We're all hunkered down and everything. The epidemic of child abuse, no one wants to talk about that. You know, damn it, we need to talk about it because it's the only way we're going to heal it.
I agree with you 100%. Something I say a lot is child abuse, especially child sexual abuse, child rape, is a life sentence. It's something that, and you mentioned it, we can heal, we can have a journey and become thrivers in our lives, but it's something that's always there, right? It's always at the corner of mind. Even for people who are surviving and thriving, who aren't doing what we're doing with advocacy work, right? That they're just going through their day to day. And I was thinking about the PTSD. I was thinking of the things you and I talked about with disassociation just now. And I'm curious for you, how do you manage that going through each and every day?
One thing I do every morning, and I have 2 cups of coffee in the morning. And my home is a modest home on a, you know, normal sized lot, if you will. There's a front yard, a backyard, a side yard, all that. Mow the lawn, there's trees. But behind me is a huge forest, okay? I don't own the forest, it's the county land. But I go to the backyard with my first cup of coffee, rain, snow, sleet, sunny weather, I am out there. And I'm just staring off into that forest to help ground me. Then I go back in and get the second cup, and there's a little part of my backyard that juts out into the forest because it then slopes down really steeply. It's a big hill. It's a great hiking thing that goes down the river. I call it my shade garden and also my memorial garden for all those who I've lost in my life, that I can think about them, okay? And I have a chair there, and I sit there, and I spend 20 minutes to a half hour just grounding myself. So that's one thing that I do. Walking is huge for me. I walk a lot. Exercise, I'm not, but I just small weights, listening to music, going online, reading articles. I'm grateful when I can read something, because that's one of the things that the trauma can get in the way, is because the confusion.
Right.
There's times, the other night, I just read a book. I read up to 100 pages, and the other night I read 200 pages. I finished the book. There are other nights I struggle to read an article.
Yeah.
Because, and I can't say why that is happening, but something may have triggered me, or an emotional response that I don't even know what's going on. And these are articles on history, about healing. It can be about politics. It can be about anything. I don't read everything about just about this stuff. I don't. I have a life. I want to watch comedy. Sometimes a comedy that will make me laugh my head off. If I was to watch that when the stuff creeps in, I'm like, that ain't funny.
Right.
You know? So it's always with you. It is there. And I that's the thing society does not understand. This stuff is with us every damn day. And yes, yesterday I was in a great mood and I was laughing. And well, Dad or Mike, why you look a little sullen today? Are you being moody? You know, no, I was just flooded with something that just knocked the wind out of my sails. And now I'm trying my level best to get through it. I don't have hospitalizations anymore. I don't have to fall apart or whatever, but it does impact my day. I can do a walk and I'm feeling great. When this stuff creeps in, I can do that same walk and it's like, oh, is it done yet?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think it manifests in so many different ways for all of us. And it impacts each one of us differently, but there's also common themes where we're wiped out. You know, you get up, you do your work and all the rest of it, but some days are not joyful. And I know everyone can say, oh, that's true. That's true for all of us. There's another layer when you have been raped. When they've done the studies and the impact of on the brain to the emotional well-being of soldiers in combat or the civilians who've been the casualties of that. We of child abuse since being raped have the same damn parameters. Something's wrong with that picture. If it's changed the chemistry of our brain, something is pretty powerful. And obviously we can heal, but so learning those things, I've learned to be a little bit more at peace with myself and that. All right, I'm a musician. I do okay, but I don't do what I used to because the confusion sets in.
Yeah.
If I get a couple gigs, I'm grateful, I'm happy. Would I rather be doing it every night like I used to or touring more? Absolutely, I would love to, but life is different. So I've had to learn to work within I guess it is confines because we are being confined in a way, restricted. We still can do things, but it still reaches out and pulls you back down. It's an invisible wound that we don't see and the rest of the world doesn't see, but it does have an impact.
Yes, for sure. Thank you for sharing that. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Let's talk about being a parent a little bit. I know going into being a parent with what, you know, the baggage that I was carrying, I was nervous. I was, you know, I constantly was thinking about perceptions and not ever wanting to be what my parent was and to me. And so I'm curious for you, and we'll talk a little bit more about this in a little bit, also being a male survivor, but being a father, how did you get through that? What did you do and how did you manage?
When, before 93, I was an engaged dad, active with him, outgoing, a lot of fun. I was a workaholic, so a lot of times I was gone, but we had and we had agreed to this in the very beginning. My ex was a stay-at-home mom with five kids, and most, you know, the kids recognize that dad is gone a lot, but mom is here. So when they come home from school, she was there. So that was a price that was paid. But when I was with them, I was fun and good with them. But I was also disconnected because of this. There was always something in the way. And it was only till years later that I could look at that. So I could only get so close to my kids and my ex-wife, and then I had to go to work because it was something I don't know what I was afraid of, so I just go to my office or I got to go to New York, I got to do some work. You know, that was true a lot of times, but I distracted through work, so I never did drugs. when I was younger, I drank too much, but meaning before my kids. But when you ask on my daughter, one of the, this is the greatest thing for me. My children taught me how to love, Penny. Mm. Everybody talks about love, and I just thought it was a load of crap. Well, I was touring overseas, and I was in Great Britain with a rock band. And I flew home, and I thought I had a time that I could see her at the delivery. She came a day early, my oldest daughter. And holding her in that hospital back here in the States, that just set something in me, Penny, that I knew I needed to change because I'm, what am I, was I 21 back then, 22? And I was a good guy, but I was a wild and crazy rock and roller. I never did the drugs, but everything else, you know, all, I lived it. It was, I was a good guy, but I was, you know, people said, Mike, you're wild, you're crazy, et cetera, et cetera. So my children helped me to get grounded. They taught me how to love. So yes, I'm teaching my children, but Penny, I used to just sit and watch them play. I was like, oh my God, this, I would just love just sitting in the living room or outside on the deck, you know, or in the pool or in the backyard, just observing my children have fun, getting down and playing with them at the kitchen set, and they were making whatever, you know, and my hair used to be longer when I had more of it, and they're putting barrettes and they're putting stuff in my beard, which hurt like hell, but I'm just smiling. So, my kids gave me love. But it was, again, it's the hindsight looking back on, even when we'd go on vacations, I still had to bring my briefcase with me, you know, for work.
Yeah.
And it was hard to always be in the moment with them. And it wasn't them, it was everything else. And so that was another piece, I think, that started unraveling, was when my kids were getting certain ages. And I was thinking, oh, what was I doing then? And that was, you know, I'd look at my kids, their kids having fun, and I'm thinking, my gosh, when I was 10 years old, I was an adult, you know. I was a mini adult. So there was all these things. So my children were a true gift, a blessing. It was unfortunate with the divorce because my ex kept them from me because I'm mentally ill. And that's where the divorce court was rough. Eventually some of them did come back into my life, but it was never the same. So I see my oldest daughter. I have two grandchildren who think, you know, they think I was the greatest thing since sliced bread. So, but as a dad, I did not want to be like my parents, and I wasn't. My oldest daughters have thanked me for not doing to them what was done to me. Yeah. Just trying to connect and learning, because we weren't taught any skills. And this is something I wish was taught in schools, because not all parents have those skills. And I try, you know, I was a good dad, I was a loving dad, but there were things I did not know I could provide for them. I wish I could have stopped myself and say, no, I don't need to go on this road trip right now. Let me just stay here with my family. But you know when that stuff starts getting churned up, you have to run. And
yeah, absolutely.
I feel bad about that. I've always just tried to be a good man. I've always just tried to be a good example to my kids. So even when they were out of my life, I'm just going to be, you know, I can be a role model from afar. I can just still be a good man.
Absolutely.
You know? So
absolutely.
I try.
Yeah, so I was thinking about this. So my brother and I both were abused in the same home. Didn't know about each other's abuse until later. And so I'm curious, from your perspective, I think there's a lot of stereotypes that go along with being a male survivor. And I think assumptions that people make about survivors in general, but I think maybe specifically more difficult for men. And so I'm just curious, from your perspective, being a male survivor, what are some of the things that have been challenges about stereotypes or the way the world thinks things should be?
You know, that you have to be tough and strong, show no emotions. And I did learn to take care of myself and felt strong in that respect, but still felt weak inside. I still won't show tears to anybody. I cry, but it's in the shower or it's out in the woods when I'm alone. Mm-hmm. And I wish it wasn't that way, but my trust has been broken. But I do let the tears come now, whereas before I just stuff them down. The impact, and let me share a couple things when I was 14 and 15. So back then I could take care of myself physically, and if anyone threatened me or whatever, I would respond and fight back. I used to babysit a lot, and a woman who I used to babysit a lot for, and then she was going through a divorce, so she's in her 30s, I'm 14, you know, 13, 14, maybe 15. She comes home, and she goes to pay me, then she pushes me up against the wall and then starts trying to kiss me, and she's groping me. And Penny, as I said earlier, anyone who put their hands on me, my fists and feet were flying. I froze in fear. Mm. You know, I'm bigger than this woman. I literally froze. I was stuck in fear because it brought back all that stuff. So when you say, how does it affect you as a male? Here's a tough young man who, a woman of 5'5", 5'6", I can't move. And it seemed like an eternity, but it was less than a minute before I finally pushed away and just got out of the house. And I had some other experiences like that in my life. And I was promiscuous, but I also knew there was an age gap that I did not want to be with someone who could be, you know, my mother.
Yeah.
That made sense.
Absolutely.
That stereotype that you have to be strong in every respect and know everything, that's a load of crap. I don't know everything. I know a lot, but I don't know everything. And I want to be a good man. That was the other thing. My children taught me empathy. I didn't know what that was. Yeah. So we can learn these things as men, as females. So I think for me, my children helped break down a lot of those barriers that, no, I can learn from them. So empathy was one, being caring, I'm passionate, I am caring. I care about the world, I care about people. So that tough veneer has come down. And I'll say, I don't cry in public or whatever, but I'll cry. And if you want to think I'm wussy for that, I really don't care,
I understand.
I care about people. So what happened to us is horrible, but I think for a lot of us, it also helps us to become better human beings.
I agree with you.
And that's what I'm trying to do. As a male, I want to be a good role model. I've spoken to young men. I've worked with troubled youth and stuff, and I'll say to them, look, I get it. You know, the ones who are in fights all the time or getting arrested. I goes, I get that. I was there. And I says, and I can't tell you what to do, but this might help. Maybe think about the martial arts. Maybe go into boxing, drumming, something where you can get that aggression out, because the aggression is there, and you just can't say, oh, will it away. No, it's there. And males and females are different. I used to love wrestling. I did love that, you know, I did enjoy, and I also enjoyed boxing and stuff. I didn't really want to hurt anybody. There is something in a male that it's there. But
yeah.
Do it in a productive way, in a safe zone. So go to the martial arts. Take up boxing. Take up drumming. I mean, that's years later, understanding how I was getting out all my rage and frustration in those drums, and I was in hard rock band. You know, it was hard rock, but we also touched upon, we were heavy metal too. So I was your football. You know, so that channeled a lot of angst out of me. Awesome. So beat things, but not people.
There you go. So what about your abusers? Did you end up having relationships with them? Were you able to break away from that?
In 93, I broke away. Prior to 93, because it was both parents and, again, some of their friends, and I don't even know who the others were, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. They belonged to pedophile rings. Mm-hmm. My father's group of, they were thugs. They were just, you know, they were criminals. One of them had been thrown off the police force. It was either Boston, Mass, or Cambridge, or Somerville. And these were big men, you know, but obviously they abused women and they abused children. My mother's group of pedophiles was from a church, and I name it because I wanted, it was the Wolfboro Congregational Church. It wasn't all the members, it was just some people in that. I had cut off ties to my father. And so before 93, he died from his drinking. He had cirrhosis of the liver, but called me before he passed away, and he said, "I'm sorry," and then he hung up. But I had stopped seeing him. So in 93, I disconnected also from my mother. So prior to that, was I seeing her at different times? Yes, and this is the thing that I'm so frustrated with. I was bringing my children there, you know, but this is where the dissociation cuts you off. And people would say, "Well, how could you bring, because you cut off it." Yet if she touched me, I'm cringing. And my kids used to say, "Dad, why do you treat Grammy so mean?" Because I didn't like her, you know? Yeah. So then I did stop. I just totally cut off from her. And that's how it's been. She has tried to reach out through the ages, and she uses all the little words that she used to use to me when she was going to do her abuse to me, but I see through it now. Now I see what she's doing. So, I don't want any contact with her. Here's the thing, Penny. I don't hate my parents. I haven't forgiven them, and I have friends who do forgive and all the rest of that. I don't have forgiveness in my heart for them, but I don't hate them. I have empathy for them, who they were as young children and what happened to them. And so that's going back to when I started. How can we help break these cycles of abuse? They carried on the abuse. I got married, had kids. I did not. So we can do this, but I just think there has to be greater awareness. So, I don't want to hate, but I don't want to forgive. I can forgive someone who's hurt me, but the thing with my parents, there was a level of evil. That's another subtext to this. When you see in someone's eyes that they are trying to destroy you, that's a whole different thing. As I was in a lot of street fights. I saw anger, I saw rage. Have this evil staring at you, and this coming from your parents, that they are trying to destroy you. That's in my gut and in my heart and in my head. That doesn't go away. So something happened there. And I don't buy, you know, the psychologists or psychiatrists will say, "Oh, that was mental illness." Bull. That was evil, you know, and I'm not saying the devil was behind their shoulder. This was just evil, because human beings, we're capable of great things. We're also capable of some really horrible things.
I agree. Totally agree. And Mike, thank you for sharing that. And I just want to say thank you for being a survivor and a thriver who stopped the cycle.
Thank you. And you too.
Makes it. That's what's changing the world, right?
Yeah, and we get to meet other people that we normally wouldn't get to see. And then that's one of the beauties I find with the thriving and healing. We can have connections with people. It's still very easy for me to isolate and just not want to go out or whatever, but right. I do enjoy friends and the people I've met. Even if I only have small interactions with them, you know, like now, you're a friend of mine now, and so we'll have some email correspondence and different things, and I'm going to treasure that and honor that. Doesn't mean we're going to be chatting every day, but I mean, these are the special gifts that we get after that you can, yes, we've had these horrible things, but now it's two human beings connecting, and I don't think we could have connected back in the 80s.
I agree with you 100%. It's so true. It's definitely what it's about. It's the human connection and our voices and making an impact on each other and other people. So thank you for that. So Mike, in wrap up, what do you want people to know? Thinking about Child Abuse Awareness Month, Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and just coming from the place of the mental health that you went through, the PTSD, surviving the abuse, becoming a thriver. And what do people need to know from you? What is it that you want them to take away and take action with to help prevent child abuse and move forward?
I would like to see all of society get on board with this, because I've always loved the statement, it shouldn't hurt to be a child. And everybody has a part in that. Even my friends who are good people, we watch football games together and everything, but they don't lift a finger in this. They don't attend rallies. They don't attend walks. There's something that everybody in society can take part in to help raise awareness and just be a part of it. Because, yeah, so that, it shouldn't hurt to be a child. Start stepping up to the plate and helping more. Because I've had people say, well, that's up to the politicians and the police. No, it's up to the people in the neighborhoods. We all need to have a part in that. So that would be one thing. As for also society, but also for those of us who've been impacted by this, there is hope. I truly believe in hope. There is healing, and we can find love. We can find joy. We can find peace. That is, and everybody, that's going to be defined differently for every one of us. So what brings me joy may not necessarily do the same thing for you, but go to your heart. Your heart will let you know what's going to help you to heal, and follow and listen to that. You know, follow that inner voice that, yes, you are deserving of love. You're deserving of joy. You're deserving of kindness. You're deserving of life. And, you know, we don't have to have all these material things just within ourselves. And, yeah, just follow your bliss. And even if it doesn't take you anywhere, at least you're trying, but you know, listen to that inner voice, because darn it, you deserve it. You truly do.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Mike, for being with us today. I really appreciate it. And this is sending you love your direction.
I'll send this from here to you.
There you go. That's great. Thank you so much for agreeing to do this with me. I just really appreciate it. And I'm just so inspired by your newsletter and the work that you're doing. And it just really, really, touches me for sure.
Well, thank you. And I'll send that right back to you.
Great.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, well, we'll be in touch, okay?
All right, take care.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us today on the Brave and Unbroken podcast. As you know, this is April, Child Abuse Awareness Month, and we are excited for many podcasts to come this month of survivors sharing their stories. You can find us on all social medias, and our website is www.braveandunbroken.com. Thank you and have a great day. Stay safe and stay healthy.